Well, one of the most popular pieces that we've published on BizNews Premium in a while is Professor Irina Filatova's analysis of Donald Trump's hijacking of the ANC's great pal, Vladimir Putin. We're going to get more on that and the latest developments in Trump land, or specifically how he's managed to do a deal with Ukraine. Maybe the peace will be breaking out. Irina will give us some insights. Irina, it is a confusing world for us, and particularly that part of the world that you come from, Russia. The ANC, up until fairly recently, had a very close love affair with Vladimir Putin, and probably still does. And maybe, certainly the way that you unpacked it for us on BizNews Premium with your piece that we published this week, maybe we should share this more broadly so people can understand why the ANC, to start with, loves Putin so much, but why they seem to be losing his affection to Donald Trump.
Who is losing their affection to Donald Trump? There was no affection to Donald Trump from anybody, sorry. There was an affection to Putin, but I think that everybody is confused. You are absolutely right. It's not that only the ANC is confused, but the whole world is confused, and it's looking at what is going on with horror, I think. There are some parties in Europe which are very pleased, and there are many Americans who are very pleased. There are some people rejoicing about what is going on, even in the Third World, because in their view, the United States has finally shown its real face, and that is not a very pleasant view. As for the ANC, yes, it is a strange situation where, for the first time, I think ever, in the General Assembly, the ANC voted against the resolution which was introduced, admittedly, by the American administration. That is the habitual thing for the ANC, either to abstain or to vote against. But it was supported by Russia, and the ANC has voted against that resolution in favor of Ukraine. So that is a very interesting turn, and we shall watch this space. I don't know how it is going to turn. But maybe the ANC has really understood that Russia is not what they have been thinking all along, and it is not really at the forefront against imperialism. On the other hand, it may be they just don't know what else to do, because now that they are allies with the main imperialist country, or seem to be an ally of the main imperialist country, then nobody understands any longer how to look at the world.
I suppose one should always go back into history to get an understanding of where we are today. We know this, the ANC's history with the with Russia is very strong and goes back way into the anti-apartheid days. But perhaps the recent history, and particularly Ukraine, can you unpack for us, please, what has been going on there? Because there's all kinds of conflicts there again. Professor Jeffrey Sachs, who's a very well-known academic in America, who was incidentally born in Bloemfontein, so he's got a South African connection as well. He has been very popular on social media saying, you know, there is two sides to the story. And in fact, Putin was completely within his rights, because the Americans had been lying for so long that he had to do something. Otherwise, they would have continued to perhaps take over Russia in the end. I don't know how much of that is fact, how much of that is fancy. But I know that you will tell us the facts, and so that's my question to you. Can you unpack it for us, please?
I can't tell the facts, because the fact for a historian depends very much on their views, as for anybody else. Of course, we are trying to be objective and to look at both sides of the coin, but still, it does the interpretation of what happened between Russia and Ukraine, or rather between the United States and Russia, because from the beginning, Ukraine was just a pawn in this war. Russia has started this war with the ultimatum to the United States and to NATO. And the ultimatum said, get out of Eastern Europe. Or we shall go and we shall get it ourselves. And neither United States nor NATO obeyed, and that's how the war started. Now, there is, of course, a very widely shared view that the cause of the war is exactly the expansion of NATO into Eastern Europe. But you see, yes, it did expand, and it did expand after the collapse of the USSR. But then the collapse of the USSR marked, to me, for example, a different world, meaning the collapse is a collapse, and the independence of the surrounding countries, former republics and East European countries, was recognized by everybody, including Russia. And by the way, of course, the territorial integrity and security of Ukraine was guaranteed when it rescinded its nuclear weapons and decided to become a non-nuclear power. It was guaranteed by the United States, Great Britain, and Russia. So either we recognize this reality, or we stay in the world which is before the collapse of the USSR, which was divided into spheres of interest. So spheres of interest where the West did not dare to admit any of the East European countries to NATO, to have close allied relationship with any of them. But look, spheres of interest are a very interesting thing, you see. The United States also has had, at that time and always, its sphere of interests. Whether you go about it by sending your troops into this sphere of interest, or you use your soft power and you use your economic influence, is a different thing. In my view, even if Russia wanted this sphere of interest, there was a different way. You didn't need to start a war. You didn't need to kill people. Russia was influential enough in Ukraine, and it could continue with this trend of soft power, economic influence, and nobody would have objected. About the sort of United States and NATO conquering Russia, there was no question about it at all. It is a nuclear power, and generally speaking, NATO is a defense alliance, and if you don't want to join it, don't join it. There's no problem. These countries which joined NATO as independent countries, they expressed their wish and will to access NATO, and it was actually very difficult. You just can't apply and be invited. They didn't cajole these countries to join. So either we recognize the existence of the right of independent countries to have any alliances they want and to have any security guarantees they want, or you don't. So in Professor Sachs's view, and there are many others who believe that smaller countries do not have such a right, that actually they have to obey what they are told by bigger powers. But then that is a very interesting view, which obviously is now we are in a new era where the world is developing exactly along these lines. We are now into the era where might is right and where a bigger power dictates what it wants and it gets it. This is how the United States behaves now, and this is how Russia wanted to behave even before the war. It's declared that it would install this new world from the beginning. That's how the war with Ukraine was for, to demonstrate its might and to collapse the old world, which existed from the time of the Second World War, and particularly from the time of the collapse of the USSR.
Sure. That really is an eye-opening. Right now, though, we're looking at the negotiation between Donald Trump and Ukraine, where Ukraine has agreed, apparently, to give up some of its mineral rights to the United States, a little bit like, and you made the point that this is, well, what used to happen in the olden days, I guess, when you would have invasions by one country of another country, and then if you won, you took the spoils of war. It looks a little like the United States is now going to be repaid for the money that it gave to Ukraine, and presumably peace will then break out as a consequence. Or is this too simplistic?
Alec, we know too little about this agreement. We really know too little. I read an article in the FT which described, they had the text of the agreement. They described it as a framework agreement, the details of which will be discussed and agreed when Zelensky comes to the United States, and there will be two teams which are going to cut out the details. Now, Zelensky has not yet signed this agreement. The terms of the agreement, as they are formulated according to the FT, are a bit better than was offered from the beginning. Something like $500 billion have to be paid in proceeds to the United States and something else. But so far as the deal is formulated, there will be a fund created, and 50% of that fund will be owned by the United States, and or the proceeds from but this 50% will go to the United States. But of course, nothing is clear with this rare earths at all, because they exist only inside the earth. You still have to have mines. You have to ascertain the quality of these deposits. And so there's a lot of uncertainty about it. Much more interesting for me is, of course, what the details of this deal will make a lot. But much more interesting for me is the way it has been imposed on Ukraine, particularly if Ukraine gets absolutely nothing for it. I mean, there's no mention of security guarantees. There's no mention of any defense from Europe or from anybody else. But if you think further, and I'm guessing, I don't know, but if you think further, Ukraine has a deal, and the American firms come and start exploring and mining and all that. In that situation, would the United States be interested in particular security of Ukraine? Would it be interested in Zelensky staying in power? Or would it be interested in any democratic elections or anything like that? It is only interested in these deposits, whether Ukraine joins the so-called democratic world or the remnants of it, I don't know. It may well be that it is not interested whether the government that would be sitting in Ukraine is pro-Russian or pro-American or pro-European or whichever government it is. If the security of the mines is provided, if it is quite safe to mine these minerals, then it doesn't matter where it belongs. And even if Putin actually occupies Ukraine, it doesn't matter because Putin is now a friend. The whole deal looks to me a bit like what Russia does in Africa, in West Africa, for example, with these mining deposits and the provision of the friendly government sitting in at the head of each of the state. So we shall see how it goes. We really do not know. But it is quite clear that the world is different.
And it's not a great place if you Zelensky right now, because Trump has said some awful things about him.
Well, it's not just what he said about him. Who cares what he says, if only they really provided the guarantee of Ukraine's security. Zelensky is in a very tough spot because, of course, his people are tired of the war. If the elections were tomorrow, he may lose them. Whether the candidate who comes in his place would be pro-Russian or pro-Western, pro-European, is not quite clear. It's not that the Ukrainian population suddenly turned pro-Russian, but they are tired of the 3 years of war, really. I'm not sure that they will understand this deal, for example. It could play against Zelensky personally. So it remains to be seen. But Ukraine as a whole is in a very, very bad spot. And I'm very sorry for Zelensky personally and for the Ukrainians because they were brave. They fought hard. And where it ends is not clear at all.
Bring it back to South Africa and the point that you made a moment ago about South Africa voting with Ukraine rather than with Russia, which has always been the case up to now. What does all this mean for us? What is this new world likely to be for South Africa? Is it going to be a case where, well, you've got to just kowtow to the great powers, or is the price of independence worth it?
Well, South Africa is in a bad spot too, because first of all, it has enjoyed many benefits from the Western countries and from its relations with the United States. And if that is withdrawn, South African economy would suffer. It is really, really in a bad place. Not only South Africa, the whole of Africa will suffer. We already know that the United States has withdrawn its assistance in the medical sphere, for example. There is talk of disallowing the continuation of AGOA, etc., etc. So this will lead to more unemployment and to really, the United States is the second biggest trade partner of South Africa, and this alone is a very, very important factor. But anyway, I don't see, by the way, in terms of trade or anything like that, that Russia or China can easily and quickly substitute what South Africa will lose in terms of its relations with the United States. But it may not even be the worst of it. It is really a world where countries like South Africa have to watch their tongue and to watch their back. Because here in this new multipolar world for which it fought so hard and which it propagated so hard, everybody on its own. Nobody is going to give you anything just for your poverty or for your bad organization or for your for your state capture or anything like that, or for your beautiful eyes. Nobody is going to do that. So, well, we shall see again how it goes. It's early days.
What's the best case scenario? I love asking this question because it does give us some area where we can be optimistic. Is there a best case scenario?
A best scenario for whom? For Ukraine, for Russia, for South Africa? For South Africa, the best scenario is to concentrate on the development of its economy and on really go not for the populist measures, which all sound beautiful, but which ended South Africa in needing a lot of assistance. And it would be very good that South Africa could concentrate on that. And to have a more sophisticated and nuanced non-partisan policy and see how you can play. You see, during the Cold War, there were many African countries who played both sides to their advantage, in terms of getting independence, in terms of getting assistance, etc., etc. If South Africa only could have a more sophisticated foreign policy, it could try to do that, that would be a very good scenario. Develop your economy and try to develop a policy in such terms that would benefit your country in any way possible and your population, really, not in terms of slogans.
So put South Africa first, put economics first, and play off whichever of the great powers is giving you the best deal at that point in time. But hold your tongue. I think that was a very good point that you made there. South Africa's not been holding its tongue. In fact, it's been blabbing out and irritating some great powers.
It was trying to play hardball, and it really does not have the weight for it. It does not have the weight for it. It's not Russia. It's not China. And I think South Africa has also overestimated the influence of BRICS and the unity of BRICS and the willingness of BRICS to support it at every possible turn. But nobody else have gone to the ICC.
Also, that is an important point on where we're seeing at the moment the G20 meetings in South Africa. The Americans have boycotted it, but many of the other great powers are just not turning up. Is that sending a signal to South Africa that what you have been standing up for, you're all on your own in this one because we're not going to fight with America?
I think that everybody is waiting. There are so many uncertainties and unknowns and unknown unknowns. There are so many of these things that it's very difficult to judge how to react, how to behave, etc. Look, even France and Britain, who were absolutely unequivocal about their position on Ukraine and about the role of Europe and their own security. Look, Keir Starmer has just announced that he is going to stop many assistance programs to Africa, and that is another blow. And everybody is arming and everybody is speaking about the need to develop their weapons and military industries, etc., etc., to preparing their population for the uncertainties of the future. But I think that everybody for now is waiting. Even France and Britain did not use their right of veto at the General Assembly vote, where the American resolution has passed.
So if we look ahead 5 years from now, what might the scenario be? And I know I'm putting you on the spot. You say there's a lot of uncertainties, but how might things develop over that time? And South Africa has to start somewhere and start looking perhaps into the future. And it's almost an assumption at the moment that South Africa can be this moral superpower, whatever that means, and that China will ride to the rescue if they get into such a bad situation, or indeed that the IMF will be able to bail out a country which at the moment is just to add to all the other problems, has got big financial issues.
Look, I will not predict anything. There may be an increase of trade with China. That would play a role. It would be difficult to be a moral superpower, as you called South Africa. Because where moral is now in this world is not quite clear. If you put all the eggs into the Chinese basket, will it really be a moral high ground? I don't know. Much depends on what happens in the United States itself, because it is not clear what will be happening with American democracy. At least one observer I heard said that it is not clear whether there will be the next elections in America at all. Now there is already talk about a third term for Trump, but will there be elections at all? We have to see. We don't know. We don't know the economic consequences of the present Trump presidency. Policy. We do not know what will happen in Europe. We do not know what will happen between Russia and the United States. So I would not give any predictions on that for South Africa in particular.
But if you had the future of the country in your hands, the advice appears to be just be quiet, just
be
reflect.
Careful. I can't say be quiet. We all have the right to express our opinions, even if unpopular. But be careful. Be careful, yes. And try to work on your own economy. And that perhaps is the most important thing. Because if you have the population which is employed, if you have the population which is fed, if you have the population which is happy and getting better, that is a very big advantage.
And of course, the inverse to that, if you have high unemployment, unhappy population, then you are fertile ground for great powers to interfere.
It's not only great powers. It can lead to chaos. Because there will be all sorts of groupings which are militarized and springing up and finding some support from abroad, from whoever, not necessarily even from the great powers, whichever forces would, the terrorist forces or whichever, can arm you and can arm this insurrectionist or terrorist groups or whatever. I don't know whether South Africa is able to, you know, some of your commentators spoke about the pending chaos or the beginning of the chaos, etc. But I don't know. But that is why my point about the economy, but it's not really original. Everybody is speaking about it.
Professor Irina Filatova, political scientist, and I'm Alec Hogg from BizNews.com.